powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Do we go
now? Oh, Bump, you thought the Dodgers, your Dodgers, were the only ones who could hit three consecutive home runs in a game? Well, guess what? The Seattle Mariners can also get that done.
Let's go.
I know. So now you get two teams. You get two teams doing it. It gets started with Julio, then Winker, then Suarez. Now, I'm going to go through a couple of these highlights. We're going to have fun with it, but then I'm going to tell you why these players in particular, it was hugely important that they delivered for you. Let's start with Julio.
I want to see Julio hit. Here's the pitch. Breaking ball. Swung on, driven deep to left. That baby's way gone. Julio with a two-run homer. And the Mariner lead goes to 5-0.
All right. Then you've got Winker getting back in there.
Ty and Julio come through. Next pitch to Winker. Swung on, driven deep to center. Giddy up, baby. Giddy up. There it goes. Jesse Winker with a home run to deep right center field. And the Mariners' lead is now 6-0.
Now, there's a wonderful clip posted to the Mariners' social media account on Twitter. Have you seen it? Of Winker and Julio celebrating.
Celebrating. They're like, what? What happened?
They turn. They turn and everyone's watching because what happens? A. Eugenio Suarez gets another.
Here's Gino. And Gino drives one. Straight away center field. Giddy up. Gone. Gino with a home run. The Mariners are on fire here in the seventh inning.
Now, Bump, it is great to watch your team win,
yeah,
right? It is especially great to watch a team that needs to win win, and tacking this on, to see a team that needs to win get it done with players who can also repeat that performance. Now, I'm not talking about three home runs, Bump. What I'm talking about is that power coming from the middle of your lineup as opposed to random utility guys that maybe you can't always depend on. This is what it should look like when the Mariners are dominant.
That's why they're in those spots in the lineup, to produce just like that. So, no, that was fun, man. You got Rodriguez who goes, and then Winker goes, and Suarez goes, and it's a celebration. You know what ruined it for me? So I'm on the phone with my buddy, and we're watching a game. He goes, no way, there's a home run. He's got cable, I'm streaming, so he's ahead of me. So then the two home runs after that, he goes, oh, my God. I go, don't tell me another
don't
one, man. Like,
anything.
You ruined it for me. But end of the day, it's nice to see the guys you want to depend on, the guys that you brought up to do these things, to do these things. Now, we can't expect them to go back-to-back-to-back, right?
Speak for yourself.
Hasn't happened since 2004 in August or something like that. I was getting ready for my first college football season back in August when this thing happened. Mm-hmm. So, but I like it. I love it. I want more of it.
Now, speaking of wanting more of it, Scott Servais saying, look, we need to build off of this.
It feels good. Yeah, it does. It has been a struggle, and hopefully we've got to build off it, though. You know, it's one game. They throw a really good pitcher or a hot pitcher at us tomorrow. Blackburn's been throwing the ball really well, so we've got to come out on top of it again and take advantage of those situations. We still have the bases loaded there late in the game, and you know, we need to do better in those spots. But tonight's a good start, and hopefully we can build on that.
Now, say whatever you want about this team, and all the criticisms are completely fair, especially considering the context of them not making the postseason going on 21 years now. However, I did kind of appreciate Service at the end of that game saying, you know what, the things that we've been struggling with, runners in scoring position, we still didn't get that done. So the three home runs are fun. Winning is fun. But, like, I feel like the undertone that he didn't say was, let's not forget this is a bad team. And also, importantly, we still struggled with things that we've been struggling with.
He's a realist. He's like, look, this was a great performance. You got good pitching. The bats got hot. But, yeah, there are still some things that you're struggling with. When you have guys running in scoring position, you want to be able to get them in. So that's just him being a wise man and saying, let's enjoy this. We appreciate this performance. But for us to get where this team needs to be, there are some boxes that these guys still need to check off.
Now I'm going to take one step backwards to yesterday. Our conversation with Scott Servais during the dugout, it was a really interesting. My favorite answer from him of the day, you mentioned him keeping it pretty real when he talked about what this team needs to do. He said, no one's going to come in and fix it for us.
There's nobody riding it on the white horse to fix it all. We've got to figure it out ourselves, and we will. I do believe in our group. We're not playing up to our capabilities right now, and we know that. But you got to continue to work. You got to believe where you're, you know, that you can get it turned around. We certainly do. But it's got to start right now. Can't do anything about the homestand we just had. It was brutal. We did not play good baseball. We know that. We got to go forward and get it going in the right direction on this trip.
Now, he's not supposed to say anything else other than the middle part about, like, we can get it turned around, right? But it, pay attention to the beginning and end of that, which is him saying, no one's going to come in on a white horse and save us. We need to do it ourselves. And also admitting this last, game, this series that we had at home at T-Mobile was brutal. It was bad. It was really bad. And guess what? I feel like the implication bump is like, yeah, we're not going to be able to trade and bring in a bunch of big bats, and they don't really need a ton of arms, but like some bullpen arms. Like, we can't fix our team quickly. We need to have the people that are supposed to be good be good.
Yeah, he's saying, look around this clubhouse's locker room. These are our guys. Now, some guys might get called up and moved down. Like, there's some shuffling that could happen, but you're not going to go out and get a blockbuster deal and bring somebody over who's going to save the day. And I can appreciate that approach. So he's saying, look, it's on you guys at this point, right? I'm going to lead. And what I appreciate about Service, too, man, is that he steps in front of the camera after every game, and he answers these questions, and he's trying to stay as positive as possible, but he's also being real with himself and with this ball club. So I'm with it, man, and let's ride this wave, man. I'm all about good vibes and getting things going, and hopefully they can do to the A's what we expected them to do a month or so ago, and which is just beat the teams you are supposed to beat. Now, the A's might be looking at the Mariners saying the same thing. We'll see how they bounce back. But, yeah, man, I like what I saw last night.
No, absolutely. And question for you, Bump. I know that there's not really the equivalent that I can have to be like a runners in scoring position to football. But one of the other themes for the Mariners this year has been underperforming years from guys that are supposed to perform. Have you ever been on teams where guys that were supposed to be doing a lot better just weren't? What went into that? Did they turn it around?
Have I been on a team like that? I would say if I were, it was a veteran team when I was with the Seahawks, and we had receivers that had a great resumes coming over. I'm not going to name any names because they're still my dudes, but had great resumes coming over, but they were
like
always.
They don't know it. They know that it was down.
They know. They're probably not even listening either, though, but they were hurt. You know, they were dropping footballs. Assignments were being blown. So when you see the guys that you are supposed to depend on struggling like that, it puts even more pressure on the back of the twos and threes, and in this case, the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I think you mentioned earlier, it's like, look, it's nice to see the middle of this lineup doing great things. It's nice when the bottom of the lineup is doing great things, but can you really depend on that consistency? Granted, there hasn't been much consistency across this lineup, but this is a good start.
And, I mean, there's been consistency from some parts. Like Ty France, I don't know that I could ask Ty France to play harder. Like, he's already hitting above 300. Yeah. He's been phenomenal for them. He's not leading them in home runs, but it doesn't matter because he's their best hitter. Eugenio Suarez is. I mean, his average isn't phenomenal. But, again, that doesn't matter because he's leading your club with now 13 home runs, I believe. So there are certain guys where you're like, I don't know how much I can ask of you. Then there are guys where it's like, it is unfair of me to ask for a lot.
Yeah.
It is unfair of me to say, hey, Dylan, if you could I joked about it yesterday, but Dylan, if you could knock in another home run, if you can get a grand slam. Like, that's not Dylan Moore's job. He has it in him once in a while, but, like, he's your guy to just, like, he's your utility guy. He's, like, he's your extra bat. I mean, he's not supposed to be your star. It's not that he can't be there. He's a major league player, but, again, like, it's you're looking at guys like Winker, and you're saying you're a guy where – it is fair of me to ask for more.
Yeah.
It is fair. And it's not like you had one off year where you were phenomenal and then the Mariners brought you in. You've been better than this guy. So where'd that Jesse go?
If you are a former All-Star, if they are selling your jersey at the stadium and at the pro shop or the team store, then you have expectations. And the thing is, these guys are professionals. They realize that. They realize that, okay, I'm supposed to do these things. That's why when Winker hits that double and brings in Rodriguez, what does he do? He looks up to the sky and it's like, thank you. You know, like, finally, I'm supposed to do these things. And they want to do these things. And so I want to see how a performance like last night changes Winker, if it changes him at all. Because of all the dudes struggling, I felt the most for him. Because I felt like he probably had the most pressure out of those guys who came over, talking about Suarez, Winker, and Fraser. So, yeah, man, embrace this pressure, embrace this feeling. But look, today's a new day. Let's keep it moving. But also, let's enjoy that win last night. Because I needed it. I texted you guys.
Oh,
I go,
my God,
thank you, baseball baby Jesus. We needed that game last night.
I felt like there was a drought and it was finally raining. And we went outside and we're just looking up at the rain, like, thank God.
Well, and we had, 48 hours to dissect that homestand the Mariners had? That was
tough.
That was, Look,
we didn't. We've had. Let me tell you what.
There have been some dry spells in Seattle sports radio, but coming off a 3-8 homestand,
8 hours of radio,
where it
on
just
a 3-8
feels
homestand.
Like the entire world is caving in. Thank you, Mariners. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it. Last thing here before we jump into headline rewrites. Yikes. That's a TikTok joke. How about the home field advantage.
Goodness.
The A's had. That was tough, you guys. At one point, I could hear someone. I don't know if it was a teammate. I don't know if it was a single person in the crowd chanting J.P. Crawford. Did anyone else hear this?
I heard that.
Yeah, when he went up and you're thinking like, oh, my God. Like, you could be one person and you could yell anything you wanted and I'd be able to hear it on the broadcast.
It took me back. My dad used to play in a softball league back in Biloxi, Mississippi. I used to go down and visit him, and you could hear everything. That's the vibe that I got. I'm like, this is like a pickup game right now. But I enjoyed it because you can hear everything, but I doubt the players out there enjoy that environment.
Other extras. How about from Kelly in the 425? I thought Julio's bat flip after his home run was pretty epic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a – how would you grade that on a 10 out of 10? Best bat flip you've ever seen would be a 10.
I wouldn't give it
a 10, but –
I'd probably like an 8.
Yeah.
I mean,
which isn't a slight.
I would say if we're going off best bat flip you've ever seen, isn't like Jose Bautista of the Blue Jays probably
yes,
number one?
For sure.
So, yeah, I would put that comfortably at an 8.
Yeah, I would say so, too. It was just the and what it is the confidence and swag continued as he ran the bases.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Like, you watch the video MLB posted when he runs past first and kind of does this little, like, I don't know, like a little turn with his jog, and you're like, I love watching this kid run the bases after he hits a home run. One last thing from the 425. I could hear the third base coach talking up Winker when he was at the plate. That's tough. When you're hearing base coaches, how about this from Marco Gonzalez, by the way, joking about that.
This is one place where I actually sit in the dugout during the game. And so you're hearing some wild things, and then you hear everything every fan says to you. So we just try to have fun with it and soak it up and, you know, try to take the crowd out of it because, you know, it's a packed house tonight. So
Packed house tonight. This isn't a Mariners fan making fun of any other fan base. What this is empathy. It is empathizing with another fan base in a different but stressful situation where you're just like, I don't know how you guys do this.
How about those fans that did show up though? Good for you guys. You
props
guys are loyal. You guys are loyal.
That's exactly right.
Short lines at the concessions.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's a good way to think about it.
Short bathroom lines.
Yes.
Let me tell you what. At the end of last season, when when T-Mobile Park was getting sold out, you would miss 2 innings waiting in line for food or doing whatever. Like I think I aged a year just waiting in line for like a single drink. All right. We have Big Ray Roberts joining us at noon today. Then Mariners reliever Ken Giles joining us at 1:30. Fun show. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Washington Post reports in 2009, Washington Commanders owner Dan Snyder reached a settlement of $1.6 million with a woman who accused him of sexual assault and harassment. What's the real headline?
Now, no joke, but how about this one? The Commanders are officially paying this woman more than Taylor Heinicke.
Goodness gracious.
That is, I know he's not your starter. That being said, this settlement is more than, I would say, half your roster's getting paid. Now, it's not a slight on the victim at all. What it is to say, how horrible an owner is Dan Snyder?
He is the worst, man. And it keeps getting worse. It seems like every single day something else comes out. And then when you get the specifics, when someone details an interaction with him, and you put yourself in that position. Like, I was at the restaurant when this woman was describing his hand on her thigh, and I started cringing. I'm like, what? The audacity of this man to think I am who I am so I can get away with this. No, sir. Show up in court. Let's see what happens. But he ain't. He's on vacation,
That's
apparently.
That's exactly right. He's apparently told them he's got some work out of the country to get to that specifically falls on when these hearings are going to be tomorrow.
United States Representative Carolyn Maloney, who is, I believe, the chairperson of this committee, had some very choice words for Dan Snyder.
We also invited Daniel Snyder to testify today. But rather than show up and take responsibility for his actions, he chose to skip town. Apparently, Mr. Snyder is in France where he has docked his luxury yacht near a resort town. That should tell you just how much respect he has for women in the workplace.
He's on business. Nice. Is there a football league in France or something he's going to? Like, I understand he has other business ventures.
NFL
but
business happening out of the country here. I mean, last time I checked,
he's
you guys
scouting.
Are playing in Germany. That's interesting. Yeah, no, this is obviously him dodging any and all accountability, which people who get away with doing that are wont to do. And that's exactly what he's been doing. I mean, look at this guy. Let me remind you guys, this settlement was in 2009. We, the public, are just figuring out the details. That of the settlement itself came out in December of 2020. But the details about what he did, that being harassing another employee, a female employee, on a plane that the team was, excuse me, that the members of the front office, members of the organization, not the team, were taking back from Vegas for some kind of event that was there. I think it was like the Country Music Awards or something. And the woman in this settlement accused him of groping her, asking her for sexual favors, and then trying to take her clothes off. It makes me physically uncomfortable. Physically uncomfortable. And who doesn't? I mean, I understand that people are going to say innocent until proven guilty. At this point with Dan Snyder, I'm telling you, if I hear that, I'm like, I can absolutely see that happening. This makes absolute sense to me. This is in line with some of the character things that we've seen from him.
He's reached the point where anything said about him is believable.
Exactly right. And you settled for $1.6 million in essentially hush money.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the allegations themselves, I cannot say this enough, are from 2009. This is information new to us. Is it information new to the NFL? I don't know. Something tells me I have a hard time believing that.
And that's what frustrates me about the NFL. Like, they are covering, or they have covered up stuff like this for years. It is a problem. It is an issue, man. Blow the whistle on all these dudes, man. It's unacceptable. Roger Goodell, The Shield, you guys need to do something ASAP.
Well, and one final note, too, is Deshaun Watson, someone we were talking about yesterday, subject to the personal conduct policy. You know who else is subject to that policy? Dan Snyder.
Mr. Snyder.
Headline rewrites.
The NFL on Tuesday asked a federal court to send Brian Flores' lawsuit to arbitration in hopes that the proceedings will take place behind closed doors. What's the real headline?
The NFL officially taking the Dan Snyder approach to their lawsuits. Interesting. Ugh. Just making sure everything handled behind closed doors.
Man, I love being some NFL. It gave me an opportunity to live my dreams out. 22-year-old making good money out of college, started my life, bought some property, but this is embarrassing, man. Like, everything looks like a cover-up. Everything's hush-hush. That's why they call it the good old boys club, because once you were in, you were one of these owners, you have some power, they're going to do whatever they can to protect you, and it looks horrible, the moves that they are making, and that's why you, Roger Goodell, one of the many reasons why you get booed during the NFL draft, because of things like this.
Well, and because people see this and they say, you know, you can come out and you can say all you want about the different causes you support, but what do your actions really say? Mm-hmm. You're asking me to buy a t-shirt or, you know, a pink jersey to support whatever, or, you know, saying that you're involved in all these things, or for that matter, speaking out when players, you know, violate personal conduct policies, if there's like a domestic violence accusation against someone or charges that have been brought against someone. And yet, when it comes to punishing your own people, the people with the most privilege within your organization, that being owners, you fall apart. And that's not to say there hasn't been some punishment. Who is the former owner? Is it Richardson?
Jerry Richardson.
Jerry Richardson.
The Panthers owner.
Right. So, but he also had a ton of accusations levied against him. So there have been instances of the league doing things. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, Steve Ross with the Miami Dolphins, we thought for a while there might be something there with him essentially offering Brian Flores, allegedly, but offering Brian Flores allegedly $100,000 per loss. We thought there'd be something, but haven't heard anything about that.
Could you imagine what has gone down in this league over the past 50 years and all the stuff they've covered up? Thank goodness for today's culture to where information gets out there quickly now. Could you imagine just as recent as 1980? The stuff that was going down in that league.
Yeah.
It's not looking good for the Shield, man.
The only thing the NFL has on its side is the quick how quickly we forget and move on to different stories.
That's what we do.
It's hard not to. It's the nature of news now, whether it's politics, whether it's local news, whether it's sports news, is that we just move on very quickly because we have so much information at all times. And the one thing I need to remind myself, and I hope we all do, is that the really important things, we don't forget about them.
Yep, I'm with you.
Headline rewrites. Headline number three. Shohei Ohtani became the first player in baseball history to drive in at least 8 runs in a game where his team never held a lead.
Sweet.
The Angels lost to Kansas City 12-11 in extra innings. He had maybe the greatest game he'll ever play, and the Angels never led once. What's the real headline?
Now, my real headline is one that some people might be thinking. Bump, the Mariners can't waste Julio.
Don't you do it. Because Ohtani's being wasted, Mike Trout is being wasted. It's so unfortunate, man. You have two of the best players in the game, and they played just for a horrible organization. And that's why I wasn't mad when Ohtani came out and said, look, I just want to play for a team so I don't have to wait 14 games for a win. Talk that talk, Ohtani. We got to get him up out of there, man. We got to get him up out of there.
I think that, honestly, Ohtani should be maybe with another team in the AL West. Like, yeah. I think that would probably be the best thing for him.
I agree.
I think the team that everybody thought he was going to sign with.
I think that'd be a great place for him to go. It's just I'm my unbiased. I'm just speaking as a baseball fan, not a Mariners fan.
Yeah, that's like a sports equivalent of like throwing for 500 yards and still losing, or scoring 60
yards.
Points in a basketball game.
Yeah.
Not winning.
Remember when Danny, now this isn't quite the same feat because knocking in 8 runs is, you're right.
It's
it would
absurd.
Be like, it would be like 500 runs, but, or excuse me, 500 yards. But remember when Danny would have that list of quarterbacks who threw for 400 yards against the Seahawks and then lost?
Uh-huh.
Seahawks were like 11 people.
Yeah, the Seahawks were undefeated against them until, I forget who it was.
Someone random, like Nick Mullins or something.
It
was someone very random, but I think Nick Mullins might have been on there as well as 400 yards.
I think Matt Schaub was on that too, I want to say.
Roethlisberger was on there, I think, like twice.
Phillip Rivers, too.
Yeah.
So it's cool. Throw for 400. We're good.
Yeah, not a problem. That's not the kryptonite. It's Bump and Stacey. You are listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Well, speaking of the Mariners, are they stuck in between a rock and a hard place when it comes to the trade deadline? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Are the Mariners between a rock and a hard place when it comes to the trade deadline? Brandon Gustafson of SeattleSports.com, who was in with us yesterday talking about this Mariners team and what they need to get right during this series. He has a new article up on SeattleSports.com about 3 ways the Mariners can approach the deadline. I'm going to go in order, but it starts with number 1, which is you just stay pat. And this bump feels like where they might need to be.
Yeah. I mean, that is pretty much what Service kind of alluded to as well, right? You roll with the guys that you have. You have a lot of young talent. That's the thing, too, is like if there were a bunch of young guys who weren't really producing, you didn't really believe in, then it'd be a little different. But you have Julio Rodriguez. You got Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Taylor Trammell, Kyle Raleigh, Jerick Kelenic, that's still in AAA trying to figure his things out. Matt Brash, who we are going to see again, who started off great but then has some control issues. I mean, there's young talent there, so I understand this way of thinking.
Jeff Passan talking about what the Mariners' goal should be at the trade deadline.
If we feel like we can get value by selling, then we sell. If we can get value by buying, then we buy, but we shouldn't be compelled to make any moves just to make moves. If the Mariners stand pat at the trade deadline this year, I completely understand the rationale behind that. If they are going to trade guys, I think you trade them for lottery tickets, for really high upside guys who have some bust potential in them, and you go hunting for stars.
That was from Passan's weekly interview on the Mike Salk Show. Jeff Passan kind of saying what you were, Bump, which is like, look, I mean, you may not have a lot to sell, which means you may not have a lot to acquire. And there's Scott Service saying no one's riding in on a white horse to save us.
Yeah, you're selling a dream, right? This is what could be. Look at this guy. This is his potential. This is what he was. And when you start going down that road where you have to convince other teams to buy, then it's going to be harder to sell, right? That's just the issue. Now, if you got guys knocking on your door and saying, look, I want this guy and this guy, and you're not dealing with expiring contracts, then it's a bit different. But, yeah, I'm all right with this. Young talent, I say keep them.
Now, there's also the option to sell some expiring contracts, Brandon says. So you've got Mitch Haniger, Frazier being one of those guys. Ironically, your offseason acquisition, potentially trading him away. You've got potentially Chris Flexen, who could become a free agent after this year. So when I was looking up, The Athletic had, it was a very long list. It was 125 players who could be part of the trade deadline.
They're all getting moved.
But Mitch Haniger was one of those guys. I mean, if you're a club who's now looking even further ahead, and, you know, once again, you're looking down the road and you're saying 2023 is when we're going to have to really push for it because it's not going to be this year, then you, it makes sense to move on from Haniger. It's just a move that makes me personally angry, Bump, and I know that it would make many people angry because it feels like giving up on the season. Even though it makes sense, you can see the writing on the wall. It's frustrating because this was supposed to be something better.
You understand the logic. You you understand that Mitch is a piece that you could get something for, but we've waited a couple years for this year, right? We've been hearing for a couple of years, 2022, that is the year. Then they blow up in 2021 and have a good season, and now we're not getting what you want out of this season. So that's what causes mixed emotions, because you've been told so many different things, and it's just not happening the way that you thought and the way that the organization thought it was going to happen. Like I mentioned yesterday, like I'm emotionally attached to a couple of dudes. Like Haniger's one of those guys where I'm like, yeah, it all makes sense, but I want him here, you know, because I always think about what could be. What if he didn't have a high ankle sprain? What if he didn't get COVID and he's in this locker room and he's leading these guys, he's producing out there. So the what could have been is what really keeps me kind of locked in on Haniger. But like you said, I understand if they were to do those things.
I'm gonna pause before I keep moving and say that I think that the team, yeah, it's not where they wanna be, and it's not maybe where they saw themselves going, but I still, this isn't part of the conversation, I still get frustrated feeling like they should have seen it coming. I mean, I'm sorry, what Mariners fan didn't think that they should have done more? I know that there are Mariners fans right now listening that are saying, I didn't, I liked Jesse Winker, I liked bringing in Robbie Ray, and I did too, like, don't get me wrong, but this was not a team that was stacked heading into the season. This is a team that didn't have a lot of room for error. And unfortunately, they had injuries. Why? Because they were leaning on guys who had had a history of injuries. Unfortunately, they didn't have prospects, you know, working out. Why? Because they were leaning on guys who had, like, a great September and not much more.
Call me naive. I was believing. I'm like, Robbie Ray? Okay, let's go. We got an ace on the mound. Winker, let's get it. Former All-Star. Frazier, okay, second half of the season wasn't great for him, but he was an All-Star. Suarez, cool. He's gonna hit some home runs for us. Julio Rodriguez, we've been waiting on him for a couple years. And then I think Kyle Lewis, Logan Gilbert. So me personally, I'm like, okay, this team has a legit chance. But hindsight's always 20/20. And you're right. You never can really predict what's going to happen unless you have some for sure things, right? Unless you have the Ohtanis, the Mike Trouts, the Aaron Judge, the Stans. Like, those are the guys that you know are guaranteed going to produce even if they go through a slump. With this, you were reaching a little bit, but I understand why they would reach with some of these guys, because their past performances says there's a chance they can duplicate that this year.
Now, in addition to selling off contracts or standing pat, they also have the option to be buyers. In fact, back during May 19th, in an interview with the Mike Salk Show for the Jerry DePoto Show, the Mariners GM had this to say when asked, do you see yourself being a buyer at the trade deadline?
But where we reside is that to go into the trade deadline as a seller would mean that we no longer truly believe that the core of this team can go win a championship. And we're not there. We think this is what we intended to create. We have to get healthy players back on the field, hopefully starting with Kyle. We get Mitch back. We start seeing some of our bullpen guys rotate back into the mix. And I feel like we're looking at a different team.
If we go in as sellers, it means we don't truly believe the core of this team can win a championship. On May 19th, he said, I'm not there. I'm not there right now. Like, he obviously thinks the core of this team, Julio, Jared, Logan, George Kirby, Ty France,
well, and
JP,
I think it's way too early to give up on that core
for sure.
Exactly. This team, because they're all either in their first or second years. Like if you're like, we've seen enough from Logan Gilbert, we've seen enough from these guys, there's no way this is going to get you a championship. Like that's malpractice is what that is.
Now, question. Do you think he would only count being a pure, like being a seller and giving up as trading one of those guys?
Well, I don't see them ever trading one of those guys.
No. But what I'm saying is I don't see the Mariners being buyers per se at the deadline. So what does being a seller look like to where it would tell you that what Jerry has said about, you know?
I think when he mentions a core group, especially at the time of that cut, I think he's talking about guys like Mitch and JP, guys who have been here a lot longer than Logan Gilbert and Julio and George Kirby and Cal Raleigh and all those guys. I think he's talking about the guys who have kind of that were in the first part of the step back rather than the wave that we've seen over the last couple of years.
I might include Kyle in there too.
Kyle Lewis. I think I would put him in that group of the first wave as well. Justice Sheffield. All those guys. I mean, we already saw them move on from Justin Dunn, who was in the Suarez and Winker trade.
So there's the been here core, and then there's like the future core. I think the future core you don't touch, the younger guys, the been here guys, the Mitch Hanigers. I guess you look at JP. I would hate to lose JP.
Well, I don't think they're dealing JP. They just gave him the 5-year extension.
Yeah, right. So I look at this team, and that's what frustrates me about this team, because I look at it and I say there's enough. I don't want to get rid of any of these guys because they've all had their moments. They've all had their time to shine. So I think they stay still. Don't do anything. You got to ride this out.
Hence being between a rock and a hard place. You don't have enough big pieces to sell off for whatever reason, because you still believe in them or because the fan pushback would just be astronomical. Mm-hmm. And that means you don't have enough to acquire the help that you need offensively, which means we're back to our open bump. You need more production from the guys that are supposed to be producing for you. Like Scott said, there's no one riding in on a white horse.
And they show they can do it. I mean, last night was a perfect example. They've shown that they can do it. If these guys had if they didn't show us anything this year, if it was just with the Oakland A's, 8-something at home, no real spark, no excitement, then it would be different, though. But even though this team is struggling, these guys are still showing, like, every now and then we can shine. Now, can we all shine together consistently? You're going to go through your slumps. You're going to lose your games. But you need to have more success than failures.
Is there a number for DK Metcalf where you would say no? That's coming up in 30 minutes, 20 minutes. Before we get to that, though, are the Seahawks falling into an old trap when it comes to the salary cap? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
All right, coming up in 15 minutes, is there a number for DK Metcalf where you would say no? It's okay if your answer is no, there isn't a number. And it's also okay if your answer is like, yeah, and it's like 25 or 26. I don't think he's worth it. Whatever your answer is. We're going to be getting to all of that coming up in 15. Before we do, though, talking Seahawks salary cap. And I know for some people that immediately gets into really boring conversations, but here's why. It's interesting. On SeahawksDraftBlog.com and a website run by a friend of the show, Rob Staton, he talked about where's the money gone for the Seattle Seahawks in 2023. He said that immediately after the trade of Russell Wilson, the Seahawks had a projected $120 million to spend in 2023. And then he says, as far as he can tell, that's dropped down to $53 million after extensions and new deals, etc., that includes the following new money on the books. You got Quandre Diggs with $18.1 million. Fine with that.
Yep.
You've got Uchenna Nwosu for $12 million. Will Disley, over $9 million. Noah Fant, $6.8 million. Quentin Jefferson, $6 million. Charles Cross, $4.9 million. And Brian Monet, $3.79 million. Now, that adds up to about $61 million in money that you added or that you took away from that $121 million. So you cut it in half with some of those deals. I got to say, Quandre Diggs is one of your best defensive players.
All for it.
I'm fine with that.
Yep.
And I understand that 18 feels like a lot for a safety. And I think what Rob points to, and again, I agree with Rob on a lot, but I think what he's pointing to is a lot of the money that you're spending isn't on a top-tier left tackle, a top-tier outside corner, your franchise quarterback, these premium positions. It's on like a blocking tight end, a rotational defensive lineman. and another tight end on two of those tight ends, and on an edge rusher who hasn't played for you yet. And I get that. I completely get where Rob is coming from. And I do think that the Seahawks have been in a place for a while now where, outside of Russell Wilson, they haven't really had a ton of those premium positions with great talent. Bump, when we've looked at the Rams, what do we always say? Well, they've got Aaron Donald, right? They've had great offensive line play. They've had Jalen Ramsey. They've had those premier positions.
Coop Cup. Yeah, here's the thing with this. Diggs makes complete sense to me. 5 interceptions the last 3 years. He's the only one causing turnovers on that defense, it feels like. Where you probably could have saved some money. Uncle Will Disley, I love you. Probably could have saved some money there. Charles Cross had to get done. Brian Monet, I love the dude as well. Probably could have saved some money there. And then Quentin Jefferson. I think with those three or four guys, you probably could have saved yourself like another $6 to $8 million. So what does that say to us that the Seahawks are paying these guys that? They fit what they want to do, right? If you trust Pete Carroll and Snyder to do what they do, you have to trust what we're seeing right here. But as bargain shoppers, we're like, oh, you probably could have went somewhere else. And then you go to free agency. I'm looking at the top 100 free agents out there right now. A bunch of 33-year-olds, a bunch of 32-year-olds. I mean, yeah, some guys with a great resume, good history, but how long are they going to be here, and do they fit what the Hawks want to do? I understand the concerns about the spending, but I tend to lean towards, look, if these guys think this is going to get it done for this year, then go ahead and spend this money. It's not like we're expecting them to win a championship this year, right?
No. Question, though. Do you think that part of their struggles have been that they haven't had those elite positions at, or elite players and investment in those players at premier positions? They've had, for a while, last year, their two priciest defensive players were a strong safety and a middle linebacker.
Yep. Yeah. No, they haven't, right? You haven't had a premier lockdown corner. Right, you had Bobby in the middle of the field. You haven't had that premier defensive lineman who's going to get you 8 to 10, 11 sacks a year. Offensively, you have your receivers, your offensive line. The best thing you've had over the past few years is Duane Brown. Maybe you found a replacement in Charles Cross, maybe Abe Lucas. At the running back spot, you had a running back for the low in Chris Carson. You had a first-round pick in Rashad Penny. So have they made the big splash? No, they haven't. That's just not what they do. Apparently in Seattle, you just don't make the big splashes when it comes to acquiring talent, right? The Mariners don't do it. The Hawks don't do it. It's something about Seattle. But no, I agree with you. Like, they haven't made that real big move. I remember it was, a couple years ago, you're looking for a defensive end or lineman. Everson Griffin was out there. A bunch of guys, and they didn't get anybody. You know, they got Benson Mayoa. You know what I mean? They found guys who fit what they want to do. So to the public, is not very pleasing, because none of these guys on this list, except for maybe Quandre, maybe Noah, are jersey guys. Guys that are going to fill up the stands, you're going to see their jersey out there. They don't do that for some reason.
Question from the 509. I wonder if the Hawks spent that money on Will Disley because of the fact that we have young tackles. Now, how much of their moves that they've made as a team, it doesn't have to be necessarily like contracts they have locked up in 2023, but how much of their moves as a team do you look at and say, here's why they're doing it? It's not necessarily for the reason you think.
I like that point on Will Disley. You got young tackles. What do? You attach a tight end to him and say, look, everything's going to be okay. I got your back. Look at Uchenna. Now, this one is the move that I'm interested to see if it pans out, because the guy, when you listen to his defensive coordinator with the Chargers talk about him, goes, look, he's good in space. He does a lot of great things. We'll see if that pans out. But none of these moves, I feel like, are moves that are groundbreaking or that are going to directly help somebody else other than the tight end spots, right? You look at Charles Cross, he's a first-round pick. That's going to help. And the signing of Brian Monet is the most confusing to people, because we don't really look at that defensive line, especially that tackle spot, and really understand what he brings to the table. Brian Monet is going to take on double teams. He's going to clog gaps. He's going to occupy players for these linebackers, for Jordan Brooks, for Cody Barton, for Uchenna, for Darryl Taylor. So you have to really kind of understand what they're trying to do offensively and defensively, I guess, to appreciate what they did with these moves.
From the 209, they've made big splashes. Jimmy Graham, Percy Harvin, it hasn't worked out too great. Now, that's one of the things that, because it's making me think of the Mariners, gets me kind of irritated of, like, if you spent before and it didn't work out, it doesn't mean that not spending, right, and not trading and not acquiring stars is the way to go. However, what I would say to the 209 is, yes, those trades didn't work out, though I would argue that spending isn't the lesson to be taken away from that. It's to acquire those big names and those stars that fit your system. Jimmy Graham, you brought in a tight end that excelled in the red zone that he couldn't block. And then you asked him to be an all-around tight end, and you didn't take advantage of him as a red zone target until year three.
Yeah, and then you got to pick your poison, too. Someone's going to get paid. If Russell was here, he'd be asking for, what, $50 million or something like that. And then you wouldn't be able to get half of these guys on this list. So it's pick your poison. Yes, you want the name. You want the guy that everyone recognizes, but then what that does is it doesn't allow you to go out and buy help on offense and help on defense. So you're danged if you do, you're danged if you don't. You go out and spend that money, you get no help. You don't spend that money, you start spending probably a bit more on guys that people aren't familiar with or don't really think are impact players, and then you get flagged for that too.
It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Is there a number for DK Metcalf? Let's talk per year. Is there a number per year where you would say no? That's next.